I want to do a shmooze first, and then I want to discuss it. There's a shmooze in the Chidush Aleif. That's the first half. So the shmooze is very hard to understand. So let's read it a little bit. There's a chazal that says that Avram Avinu went ahead and bought the Maariv Machpelah. Says Ramban, Ugdivei Rabbi saying, according to the Rabbanan, Ephron Kotzav Damim Kiritzaino B'yoker Gadol. Ephron overcharged Avram Avinu tremendously. The Avram bin Nidvas Libo, and Avram with his generosity, Shama V'Asa Kiritzaino. He did what he wanted. Big deal. More. Okay. So, says Rashi has a diak, that Avram bought it because he was generous. If he wouldn't have been generous, he wouldn't have bought it. So he has a kasha. Avram wasn't trying to be generous to Ephron. It doesn't seem that Avram was in a decided, oh, I want to help Ephron. Avram bought it because he wanted the Maariv Machpelah. Especially, we know the Chazal, that the Maariv Machpelah was the place where Adam and Chava were buried. It says in the Chazal, it's in the Medrash, that when Avram Avinu was running after the he was running after a what? What was he running after? An ego? What ran away?
Ran.
An ego. So was it an ego? Yeah. So he went ahead and he was the ego ran into this cave, and that's how Avraham discovered the Maariv Machpelah. And he went into this cave, he saw there the special light, and he realized that Adam and Chava were buried there. So Avraham made this discovery that no one else knew, that Adam and Chava were buried in this cave. So he wanted that cavern. He realized this is the most precious, special place in the world. So Avraham bought the Maariv Machpelah. Not because he wanted, oh, poor Ephron, he needs some money, I'll give him some business. Nothing to do with it, right? Avraham bought the Maariv Machpelah because he wanted it to bury Sarah, because this was the best place. Now, Ephron went ahead and charged him an exorbitant price. Ephron didn't know that it was where Adam and Chava were buried. So Ephron thought he was ripping Avraham off. Right? He thought, he saw that he was a good businessman, and he picked up that Avraham wanted it. So he doesn't know why Avraham wants it, but he's going to, if you want it, you're going to have to pay for it. So he's charging Avraham a foot and a leg, arm and a leg, what's the expression? Arm and a leg. But in reality, really, Avram's getting a bargain, right? Because Ephron doesn't know. Maybe it's not Ephron, maybe it's worthless. But in reality, Avram is getting something which is much more valuable, because he's getting the special place, the most special burial place in the whole world. But Nitzan, Ephron thought it was overcharging him. So the question is, why is that called that Avram's being generous? He's not being generous. He didn't buy it for generosity. He bought it because he wanted it. That was Rashiva's kasha. So Rashiva answered, skipping to the paragraph of Yesh Lomar. Ephron thought, that's what everyone says, that Ephron thought this was a crummy field. It was a field, you couldn't grow anything on it, it wasn't good. He thought that he was jipping Avram, ripped him off. He saw, for some strange reason, Avram wants it. No, good, I got a good customer here. So he's taking advantage of Avram. So Ephraim's walking away thinking, boy, did I rip that dumb Jew off. Avram realized it. Shemitzad Ephraim Ram, that from Ephraim's perspective, he's jipping Avram. If not to the fact that Avram was very generous, lo yakinas amaris machpeinah. You hear that? In other words, if Avram would be a normal person who didn't have a very special need of generosity, he wouldn't have bought the Maariv Machpelah. Why? Because you're jipping me. You're overcharging me. Aye, but I want it. And to me, it's worth it. Doesn't make a difference. Shekein teva adam she'eino noisein bi'ad acherim b'iso. I'm not going to let you jip me. You're trying to trick me. You're trying to jip me. You think you pulled a fast one on me. I'm not going to let you pull a fast one on me. No way. I'm not buying it. I'll buy something else. Right? Wait, okay, 1 second. I don't know. Let's see. This is what he's saying. He's saying, oh. Because he decided he wants to do chesed to himself. So his desire, an interesting thing, there's a concept of doing chesed to himself. So his desire to do chesed to himself overcame his feeling not to do it. In other words, if he wouldn't have been such a Baal chesed, okay, so I won't do it. I'll show him. He thinks he's going to go ahead and get the and trick me. No way. But because he was about chesed to himself, so therefore he went ahead and he did it. Okay, that's what the Ramban says. That's what it is. So when you think about it, it's pretty crazy, no? Here you have Avraham Avinu wants to buy the Marat Machpedo. The Maran Machpeda is the perfect place. It's worth many, many times more than Avram paid for it. It's a bargain, ship of bargains. It's the place that you want, right? This is what you've been dreaming for your whole life. Get the Maran Machpeda, where Adam and Chava are buried. Some special Kedusha. Avram Avinu loves Kedusha. Right, so that's what he wants, a special, the most Kaddish burial place in the whole world. And except that Ephraim thinks, and he is, not just thinks, he really is, he's ripping you off because he should charge you so much. Okay, so he's ripping me off. So because of that, I'm going to turn down the Marat Machpeda. Does that make sense? But what? I didn't hear someone say something. No, don't make sense. But apparently it does make sense. Because that's human nature. Human nature is that I'm not going to let you think that you outsmarted me. You ripped me off. That's, I can't let you get away with that.
Why is it a bargain?
Why is it a bargain for who? Because the mice of this was, Adam and Chava were buried there. Ephraim didn't know that. So as far as Avram is concerned, he would probably pay twice as much money for this. He'd probably pay 100 times much more money for this.
But he knows he's getting ripped off.
That's right. He's getting ripped off because Ephraim has no right to charge. Let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say I have a set. I'm collecting something. And I'm missing one thing for my set. And if I get that one thing, then my set becomes, you know, without that one piece, my whole set's worthless, right? I have a car. I have a $100,000 car, and it won't work because it's missing a certain plug or whatever. And they don't make that plug anymore because they don't make this car anymore. I don't know, right? This piece. I don't have that little piece. So I have this $100,000 or, you know, whatever, million-dollar car, which is worthless because it doesn't work because I'm missing that little plug, right? Because they don't make these, they don't manufacture anymore. Or so I go to some junk sale, and I see that plug. And I ask the guy, how much is it? He says, $5. $5 for that little plug? You kidding? That's a jip. You know, I'm not going to buy that. It's only worth $3. I'll give you $3. No, $5, take it or leave it. I'm not taking it. Okay, so it's not that, $100. Okay, $100. You want $100 for that plug? You think I'm some kind of idiot? You're trying to jip me? Trick me? Steam's coming out of my head. I'm not taking it.
But it says it was an insane amount of money.
Okay, it was an insane amount of money, but it doesn't make a difference. It's the Marat Machpeda was worth much, much more for Avram. It wasn't because, that's why he's saying, Avram Avinu wants the Marat Machpeda. Avram is rich. He's a rich guy. He has the money. This is what he wants. You charge him $1 million, it's worth it for him. It doesn't make a difference. So it's the tzir is because you're jipping me. You're walking out and you think I got the better of you. Ooh, I outsmarted you. You're a fool. In Israel, there used to be an expression I used to kunstam. I think it's called a fair. Is that the expression? What? Friar. Yeah. You're the fool. We got you. I used to go argue with my kids all the time. The kids would say, I don't want to be a friar. I said, what do you care if you're a friar? You're right. This is what you want. No, they're going to call me a friar. You know. What? They did? To who?
Me.
Okay. But the thing is, it's ridiculous, right? Anyway, that's what I was talking. You see a certain kayach. What?
What does that have to do generosity?
Generosity was what, in this case, what counted it. Otherwise, he could also count it because he was being generous to himself. That's what the Ramban said. Since he was generous to himself, so he was ready to be soivel the pain of being called a fool, of being called the sucker, because to be a generous. There's such a thing of being generous to himself. The point I want to make is a chiddush. What?
You were saying it's not human nature to.
It's human nature for a normal, for a person, would turn down something which is good for him because he doesn't want to be perceived, or even more than perceived, to maybe reality, to be considered a fool, to be looked at. It's because, not so much because the guy is going to look at a fool, because he's being gypped. He's being.
Doesn't that make it much better? He thinks he's
gypping
me, but I'm totally.
I know, that's why it's really much even crazier. But Maisa, Ephron has no way to know that Avram Adam and Chav are there. And for him, it's probably worthless, even if he would know. So what does he got? They use Maisa Kvar. So there's an old man buried there. He can't see the Kedusha. He can't appreciate the Kedusha. So he feels. Now, basically, we're trying to say, my father used to be, it was a shul rabbi, of a big shul. And the shul had many, many Baal Batnim who were partners in business. And one of the things they used to do a lot is people in the partners in business would get into fights. And he used to help make shalom among the partners in business. And all the time I would hear this from him. It was almost ma'isim b'chol yom, because he was very involved in this. He says two business partners had a $1 million business. They got into a fight over $50. One guy spent $50, and the other guy said, you had no right to spend. And he said, yes, I did. And he said, no, you didn't. $50, $100, whatever it is. So they go ahead, and they get lawyers. And the lawyers' fees are mounting up to tens of thousands of dollars. And they're fighting it out. They're going to court, and it's going on for weeks and weeks. And my father's trying to make peace and says, it's just $50. The lawyer's fees are costing you $50,000. Why don't you just forget it? And say, Rabbi, it's not about the money. It's the principle. Right? The principle. What's the principle? The principle is he's going to win and I'm going to lose and I'm going to be the sucker and I ain't going to be the sucker. So I'm going to waste $100,000 so that I don't lose.
So
that's Gaiva? Yeah, it's a form of guy.
How's it connect to Avram being generous?
Avram solved that problem because I'm generous, so I'm ready to suffer that pain because I'm a generous. If you're a generous person, and I give.
That's what Avram told himself.
So he says, I'm generous. I'll be generous to myself.
Avram couldn't handle the fact that, like,
I don't know. Maybe there were other ways he could have done it, but this is how he did it. That Ramban says, he by saying, okay, listen, Einachinami, it's a heavy price. It really hurts. It hurts that I'm being looked at like the sucker here. But the part of my generosity. I have to be generous. There's a needy person. Sarah needs a Beis HaKfaris. I need the Maratha Machbeda. So I'll suffer the consequence. Okay, but the point I'm trying to get is that the midah of a human is so crazy, but that's normal. That's what people do all the time. People mess themselves up day and night. I have to tell a few more stories because I think I told this story last year. I'm pretty sure I did. But it's a true story, and it's such a gewaltic story, I have to tell it again. Because it made such a rush me. I don't think I lived through it, but I lived through it. And there was a certain business that was owned by, there was a two Baal Batim. One of them was in my father's, somehow it was related to my father. He wasn't exactly sure. My father was very close with him. He didn't say anything. And the other one was, I don't know who the other one was. And they had a business, and it was a gewaltig business. It was a very, very good business. I don't know exactly, but it was, say a multi-million-dollar business, let's say. It was a good business. So one partner decided, this was in this probably the year 60s, that, such a gewaltig business, and he was young, he's going to sell his half of the business. He'll get $1 million. He'll move to Israel. In those days, in Israel, $1 million, you're the king. Because in those days, Israel was a poor country. He'll retire. He'll buy himself this gorgeous apartment. He'll live it up. Great. The other partner said, you can't do that because you and I, we worked well together. But you're going to sell your half of the business. Who says I want to work with that other guy? Maybe I won't like that other partner. You can't sell. Or if you sell, you have to get my permission. Who are you going to sell to? And the guy said, no, what are you talking about? I'm selling my business, my half. I'm selling it to whoever I want. I'll pay it to whoever pays the highest price. So they got into the giant fight. So the guy said, well, you can't stop me. I'm selling it. So he stopped him. How did he stop him? He went to the IRS. And he showed them that they were fake books, and they were cheating on their taxes, and the IRS closed the business, and he had no businesses to sell. Ha, 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 I won. You didn't get to sell your business. You can't move to Israel. It's a true story. What? He lost also $1 million, but he won. He won. You think you can just sell the business and you can go ahead and move to Israel and leave me stuck here? No way. I'll show you. We went ahead, and it was such a chiddush Hashem because it was a Jewish business, and there was a big sign on it. This business has been closed by the IRS due to not paying the taxes. But that's what happened. So that is this midah. I'm not going to let you win. Another story, so it's the same exact thing. There was a guy, and this is, I used to grow up with shul politics. But this was, it wasn't in my father's shul, but it was a different shul, but it was, I knew about it. I knew about it. There was a guy who lived in a neighborhood. There was basically one shul next to his house. And the other shul, there was a little bit, half a mile away. He was davening in the shul for, I'd say, 10 years. He's a chashiv baal bas in that shul. He has a makom kavua. He sits in the front. You work your way up. You become a chashiv person in the commune. Comes one week, for whatever reason, the gabbai insulted him. He needed an aliyah for his yard site, and the gabbai decided that he already got too many aliyahs. How many yard sites you have, how many grandparents you got, great-grandparents, and now it's a yard site for your, a yard site for your dog, whatever. They get accepted, gabbai. Every time you want an aliyah, he didn't give an aliyah. So the gabbai insulted him. Oh, he showed that gabbai. What did he do? He never went to that shul again. Right? So now he walks a half a mile every Shabbos to some other shul where he's a nobody. He sits in the back because he's showing that gabbai. Like the gabbai really cares. I'll show you. You're not going to step foot into the shul again because you insulted me. Right? It just sounds very childish, but regretfully, that's how most people are, 99% of the population. And that is the problem at all. The people go ahead because of this feeling that I can't let you win. I can't let you You know, it's more than jhanas. It's total stupidity. It's stupidity. Because you're just hurting yourself. The time they say, are you my kids? I'm telling you, what do you care if they think you're the friar? You know, what do you care? If this is what you want to do, right? You want to do this. So what do you care? Can't do it. A person cannot, there's a certain midah in a person. I assume it's a gaiva, that I can't let the other guy think he wins. Now we go to the second half. The second half is a different job. This, the first sefer is an adult sefer. The second sefer is a children's sefer. We won't mention the name. Okay. It's a story. There's a story here. Okay. Shalom, David. Okay. Right? Okay. David comes over to Chaim's house. And they say, okay, what are we playing today? Zug o Parrot. I don't know what that game is. Heads or tails, I think. I don't know how you play that exactly. Okay. So they're playing. So Nisakta Osi Oscha. I won. David says, Mapitom. Right? You know what Mapitom means. What are you talking about? I won, right? So he says, so what do the other kids say? Shakranata, you're a liar. Right? So what do they think? What? I'm the liar. You're the liar. Okay, right? Next day, these are the best friends. Does he go pay by his friends anymore? No. Why not? Call me a liar. I'm not going to play with him. He has to come and apologize. Till he comes and apologizes, I'm not talking to him. Right? He audacity. He called me a liar. Right? I'm not going to talk. Now, what does he call the other guy? What does he say? He better come and apologize. He called me a liar. Right? They both say the same thing. Each one says, I'm not talking to him till he apologizes. So what happens? That's the end of the friendship. Except that's not the end of the story. Okay. So they that's what usually happens. So they go home, and according to the Svar Torah, the mother tells him that you should learn from Avram, from Moshe Rabbeinu, that even though Dathan and Aviram insulted them, Moshe Rabbeinu went, and he went and asked them for forgiveness. He went to ask them for forgiveness, even though they should have asked him for forgiveness. Right? That's the end of the story. So they went and they asked for forgiveness and they made up and now they're friends again. Right? That's the story. Okay. But the idea is, basically, let's put it in more in context. A husband and wife. Right? Husband and wife. Right? Now, they get married. They have their first misunderstanding. It happens. I don't say it always happens, but 99.999% of the time. Sometimes husband and wife have a misunderstanding, right? So, we don't know who's right. But each one thinks they're right. And each one is insulted, right? Right? Because each one feels, let's say the wife is upset for the husband that he did something, and the husband feels he didn't do it. There's no reason why she should be upset. So she's upset for him for doing, how could you go ahead and insult me like that? And he says, how can you be upset that he accused me of insulting you and I didn't insult you? Right? That's a typical scene or whatever it is, or something, I don't know, whatever story you want to make up. I don't know, I never have this in my house, so I wouldn't know. But I'm sure these things happen, right? So there's some kind of fight. The husband and wife get into a fight. So now what happens? So each one is waiting for the other one to apologize, right? What happens? No one apologizes, right? Okay, so now what happens? Okay, it was a nice honeymoon. Now they can go to the rabbi and want a divorce. It's not a joke. If you can go ahead, a person can destroy his own marriage on the stupidest argument over a piece of kugel, you know, because I think, you know, you should apologize to me, and you think I should apologize to you, and therefore, and it's our principle of the thing, right? It's our principle, I'm not apologizing. She should apologize to me. She insulted me. She called me inconsiderate. Whew! You know how considerate I am. And she says he called me ultra sensitive, and I don't know, and I don't know whatever other words, you know. Whew! Whew! That's right. I'm not. You got it. You get it. I'm not apologizing. You think I'm apologizing, and then next time he's going to go ahead and do it again? No. I'm right, and he's wrong, and I'm waiting for an apology. And if I don't get that apology, I'm sorry. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking for the next week. You stand in the house, and you know, I don't talk to you, and you don't talk to me, and you know, and then maybe we do talk to each other, but we're not screaming at each other because till you apologize, I'm not talking to you, right?
There's no point to that, though.
Does it sound like there's a point to it?
No, I mean, no point that, you know, that they might feel the other person.
Of course, they feel that way, but do you want to get divorced over a piece of cocoa? Over a fight over a cocoa, is it worth it? You know, is it worth it for that? But that is what happens. I don't want to say ma'isim b'chol yom, but that is ma'isim. I don't think that b'chol yom, but it's ma'isim. People get into the stupidest fights over the stupidest little things, and they're not ready to apologize because it's my covet. Or it's because, like you said, if I apologize, then next time also I'll have to apologize, right? One thing I'll pop, but you think I'm going to always apologize? No way. I got to set the marriage straight, you know, we got to start off the marriage on a good footing, right? I got to start on a good footing that you have to know that you have to apologize. That's the right way to start off the marriage. And except that you don't talk to each other for the first month. That's not a good way to start a marriage. Right. Generally speaking, who should apologize? First of all, whoever is smart enough to apologize to end this stupid fight should apologize. Right? Someone should have a brain and say, hey, wait a second, this is getting ridiculous. This is getting ridiculous. We're gonna lose our marriage, which is very precious to me, over a stupid fight over a piece of kugel, of who would get to eat the last piece of kugel, and you know, and it's worth it for me to apologize. And it's, of course, it's not good if you say, "Well, I'm apologizing, even though I'm right, but I'm apologizing." Right? So it has to be that you really mean it. Now, how can you really mean it if you're right? If you think you're right? Because you have to understand that you really weren't right. Because there's always two sides to every story. So therefore, the probability is, when you think about it honestly, listen, you didn't marry a nut, hopefully. And if your wife got upset, probably there is a reason. So from her perspective, she's right. So you probably were wrong in doing something that from her perspective got her upset. Now, she was probably wrong for doing something that from your perspective got you upset. So maybe you're both wrong. You're both right and you're both wrong. So you both get an apology. It's not a fake apology. It's a real apology. And it doesn't have to do with your wife. Same thing with a friend. You get into a fight with a friend. So you assume the guy's not a nut. So he has a reason why he's upset. He's not crazy. Now, you have a different perspective. There is a famous line that I always say in shir. Guys in my shir heard this many times, right? That the two people come to the rabbi for the din Torah, and the first person says his opinion, and the rabbi says, you're right. And then the second person says his opinion, and the rabbi says, you're right. And then the wife says, but they can't be both right. And the rabbi says, you're wrong, right? That's what I always say. Rabbi says, you're wrong. Of course they can both be right because they have two different perspectives on the same thing. And almost everything, you know, you have an optical illusion and I insist that it's a lady and you insist that it's something else. We're both right because we're looking at it from different perspectives and different people have different perspectives and you're both right. That's usually how it is. Usually, 99% of the times, usually, and that's the other guy you're arguing with, is some guy in a mishugan, which then you shouldn't be, you know, married to that person. You know, hopefully you're not married to a person, or you shouldn't be, you know. But usually, if the person is a normal person, obviously he has a perspective why he feels the way he feels.
Is it smart to inquire what their side is?
I don't know if you have to inquire, because maybe you're not capable of understanding it. Maybe that person is more sensitive than you are. Maybe that person has different, you know, I think it's almost the brighter, the easier Hargosha, instead of, you know, then you have to think, well, do I really hear it? No, I don't hear it. Okay. No, you say, listen, if you were insulted or whatever I did, then obviously I was wrong, because I shouldn't have done. I don't want to do something that hurts your feeling. Okay, so I have to find out why. Okay, that's true. But even without the apology, you know, I insulted my roommate. Now, I didn't want to insult your feelings. I don't like hurting people's feelings. You know, the last thing I want to do is hurt someone's feelings. Somehow or another, I inadvertently hurt your feelings. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I don't even understand why you got so upset, but you did. Obviously, you did means that maybe that I'm oblivious of something. I don't understand your sensitivities, and therefore I did something that got you upset. Now, in a certain sense, it's my fault that I don't have I'm not that big, such a big pikeach to understand where you're coming from. So I am legitimately apologize. I'm legitimately sorry. I went ahead, I did something which hurt your feelings, because not because I maliciously wanted to hurt your feelings, but because I didn't understand where you're coming from. If I would have understood where you're coming from, I would have never done that. Of course not. So I really am sorry. I wish I didn't do that. I don't like hurting people's feelings. When I feel terrible that I hurt your feelings.
Wait, with a husband and wife, I don't know what it is, but with one friend to another, it comes across, especially with guys, it's a lot harder to go to confront your friend and say, oh, I didn't want to insult you, I didn't want to hurt your feelings. Like that makes it sound like you just opened up a therapy book and like reading off of him.
I don't see why.
It sounds like you're just reading
something. I don't think so. I don't agree. We disagree. I think you can do it with sincerity and honestly, and it's truthfully. I see how upset you are. The further thing from my mind was to get you upset. I care about you. I like you. You're my friend. I see you got upset. I definitely did not mean to get you upset. You don't have to say, I don't know why you got upset. There must be something wrong with you mentally, you know? You don't have to say that. You just say, listen, I see you got upset. I definitely did not want to get you upset. I feel terrible that I got you upset. And I apologize for getting you upset. And I'm honest. And I'm saying the truth. I'm not faking. Faking doesn't go. I don't. Not that I never fake, but I don't believe in faking. Faking, people figure when you fake, you usually lose, because eventually you get caught faking, and then it's worse, because then you lose all trust, and the guy can't trust anything you say, and yeah, you're just saying that you don't mean it. You have to mean it, but a person should mean it, because first of all, I want my friendship back. We have a friendship. I don't want to lose a friendship over such a stupid little thing. So it's worth it for me to get I want it back. And that thing should have caused us to lose a friendship. I feel terrible. And that thing should have made you so upset. I feel terrible. I really do feel terrible.
Even if it's going to make the other person feel very, very, very uncomfortable.
It won't make him feel uncomfortable. It'll make him feel very good. Because he'll feel, oh, you apologize to him. So, fine.
So
can't really handle that type of
I don't agree. I don't agree. I need low maskim. I don't agree at all. I think most guys would appreciate. They'd be thrilled. You apologize now, okay? Now we can be friends again. Okay, let's shake and make up, okay? And then it's forgotten. And it's totally forgotten. Forgotten. Go on. Over.
No underlying problem.
There's no underlying
principle problem.
There's no underlying problem. Not issue. They got into some stupid misunderstanding. I thought I won the game, and you thought you won the game. So here, they got into it. I called you a liar, and you called me a liar. There's a misunderstanding. We got into a fight. Not everything.
Why was there a misunderstanding? Maybe next week.
Okay, you're over it. Okay, maybe you're right, but that's, you don't have to be such a psychologist. Here we have the story. I have the story. You read the story. What caused the misunderstanding? They were playing a game. They were having a race. He says, I won. You said, you won. And this game, you're a liar. No, you're the liar. Okay. What was the deep psychological reason they got into a fight? Because they were playing a game, a basketball, and they were very intense with the game. Okay. There's no deep, there doesn't always have to be deep reasons for everything. The Maisa that got into a fight, it's not, you're right. If we know why, then we can avoid it in the future. That is true. You are right. That, you want to avoid this, you shouldn't have a repeat. So it pays. The second thing to do is to sit back and to think what caused it. And you're going to get it. But the first step, the Maisa, the first step is to a person. You don't be stupid. And then there are people that are stupid, but most people are stupid. People lose millions of dollars. And I found these to tell me every day almost. I'm not every day, but every week at least. People lose hundreds and thousands of dollars over a fight for $50 because it's a principle. Right? There was a case here. I tell the guys, it was in the news, in Signature Grand. Signature Grand is the wedding hall in, where is it, in Fort Lauderdale? I wanted to do my wedding, the doors weren't there, but it was booked, okay, so we couldn't do it. But there's, it's a hall, it's a very nice hall, not so far from here. So it used to be owned by two partners, but what happened is one partner hired a secretary without the other partner's permission, and the other partner got very upset, so he took out a gun and he killed the other partner. So only one partner is dead and the other one's in jail. You know, right? That's called road rage. You know, I'm driving a car and he had the chutzpah to cut in front of me. He cut in front of me. You know what he did? He cut me off. I had to step on the brake.
That's it.
So I take out my gun and I kill the guy.
Right? I mean, in that scenario.
Right? That's what it is. But that's the same thing. It's the same midah. It's the same crazy midah that people ruin their lives because of the principle. He cut me off. He went ahead and insulted me. He went ahead and he jipped me $50. He went ahead and he cheated me. He's going to think that he won when he really didn't win. I can't let him think that he won. I should apologize to him when in reality he has to apologize to me. You kidding, Rabbi? I'll never apologize. Never, never, never. Till he comes and bows down and kisses my feet, I'm not talking to him. You know? And therefore you have people that have friends for 20 years. They'll lose their friendships and they'll lose their business. It's the craziest thing. It's mamish crazy. So we have to learn not to be crazy. You know, that's the way it is. And it takes gevura. It happens to be, it's not so easy. Most people don't do this. But we're trying to be better than most people. And trying to be better than most people means to have seichel and to realize that it ain't worth it. You lose your friends, you lose your wife, you lose your business, you lose everything over because you're standing on the principle, which is another word for your gaiva. And it ain't worth it. And you should really be sincerely be sorry. It's not fake. You should really feel sorry. You got your friend upset. And there's no reason why you can't apologize. He's not apologizing, so you're bigger than him. Right? You're better than him.
Is it also a perspective to say the guy just has bad midos and then cobble that?
Okay, yeah, maybe he has bad meat, but I have to apologize. If you're not going to, if no one's going to apologize, then it's not going to go. And if you're going to say, well, he has bad meat, but if if that's what you're going to believe,
yeah, you're, comes from a certain, place.
I understand, but that's going to be not going to be very good for the relationship, you know? You're going to walk around saying that I'm definitely right, he's a bum. Shankamo. But, okay, but because I'm going to go ahead and apologize just to make him happy, it doesn't usually go because people...
Sometimes it is coming from bad news.
I understand, but usually people, we're big believers that people can... You can't fool people. You know, when a teacher... We say this many times, when a teacher makes believe that he likes a student when he doesn't really like him, usually the kid knows that the teacher can't stand him. And it just causes the kids being, oh, you're just a liar. You know, don't trust anything he says. He's just political. You know, you never hear people say to someone, you can't trust anything he says. He's just political, you know. You know, you have my classical example is you have a kid in class, I'm running out of time, but they have a kid in class who misbehaves. And everyone in the class knows that the teacher can't stand this kid, right? It's all the body language and everything about the kid and this teacher. Like, the teacher can't stand the kid. And I can understand the teacher. This kid, he's trying to teach, and this kid keeps on disturbing the class, makes it impossible for him to teach, and he doesn't like the kid. Okay, you know, it happens. One day, the kid's not there. Teacher's taking attendance. David, kid says he's out. And you see the teacher, big smile. Ah, Baruch Hashem. Okay. The next day, right, David comes in. Oh, David, I missed you. Oh, I was so sorry. I was so sad yesterday when I took attendance and you weren't there. Right? What does everyone in the class say? Oh, this Rebbe is such a liar. Right? So you lose it. It doesn't pay, even though it sounds good to lie because, oh, you know, I want to say a message. A nice message. Most of us are very poor liars.
So what do you do?
And now there are certain people that are good liars, you know, that they're you know, I don't, you know, certain politicians are they, you know, but most people are not good liars.
So what do you do?
And their body language gives them away, and they're, you know, and so you don't lie.
So
you tell the truth.
In your class like that, what do you do?
You don't
like him.
You don't have to tell him you don't like him.
But
you don't tell him that, oh, I felt so bad when you weren't there.
You just don't say anything nice to him.
You say, oh, welcome back. You can say that. But you don't say, oh, I was so sorry. All day yesterday, I couldn't sleep because I was worried about you. I was so sad that you weren't here. You know, come on, give me a break, you know. Everyone knows you're lying. You want to say, I'm welcome back. I'm sorry you weren't feeling well. Okay. That could be. That's true.
If you ask anyone from an outside view who's not involved in the situation, you ask anyone would say that this is ludicrous. Like we're saying, when you're in the situation, it's very hard.
Yeah, of course it's hard. 90%, 99% of the population flunk on this. You know, and then they have, because they don't want to be. There's a Meiser of Ari Levine, a famous Meiser of Ari Levine, went ahead and was always in Achnasas Orchim. That was his special mitzvah, whatever. And he invited and he was also involved with prisoners from jail. And he invited a guy came out of jail who was a robber, and he got out of jail, and he invited him to his house. And sure enough, the next day he woke up and the guy, his guest was gone, and so was some of his possessions. So what was the first thing he did? First thing, I don't know, maybe he did that too. First thing he did is he spoke to his wife. He says, let's be mekabel that we're not going to let this stop us from doing Achnasas Orchim. Because that's what people do. You know, here, my whole life I'm doing Achnasas Orchim. Oh, this guy took advantage of me. No more. I used to lend out money. I ran a gamach, but one guy borrowed money from me and didn't pay me back. That's it. I'm not lending money anymore. I'm not going to let people take advantage of me. I'm not going to be the friar. People take advantage of me. This guy tricked me. But you're ruining your life. You want to have a gamach. You want to be machnas archim. You want this mitzvah. So, okay, one guy took advantage of you, but 99% of the people didn't take advantage of you. So you're very happy running a gamach. You're very happy doing this mitzvah. Okay, so that's the price. The price you pay to do this mitzvah is that one out of every 10 people will steal from you. Okay, that's the price. The price, yeah, there's a guy in the yeshiva who's we have this all the time. There's a guy in the shul is a big Baal Chesed. You know what happened when you're a big Baal Chesed? This is what I used to argue with my kids, my sons about. I used to tell them to become a Baal Chesed. What happened when you're a big Baal Chesed? People take advantage of you because they know that you ask them, you always say yes. So people will ask you even when they don't need the favor because they're lazy. Hey, he always does it, so let him do it, you know? So you get taken advantage of. Okay. But you want to be a Baal Chesed? It's worth it. No, I'm not going to let myself be taken advantage of. So I give up my dream of being a Baal Chesed. Right? That's how most people are. Okay, anyway. That's the way it is.
What's the job to take to work? What's going to be better for the future? Like,
You have to be realize that it's stupid. You're ruining your life because of a midah that you want to be considered a fry. So you know when people make a feeling, someone to feel that he won, he outsmart you, he took advantage of you, he got you to clean the dining room for him when, you know, he's going and having fun, and he asks you, and you are as the Nebi Baal Chesed, he says, oh, can you do me a favor and clean? I can't clean today. Oh, okay. Meanwhile, he got to go out and play ball, and you got stuck in the dining room all day cleaning. Huh. You know, he's laughing. Hey, what a sucker he is, you know. So, okay, so that's right. That's what happened. The guy, you were a sucker, and he got you today. But that's the price you pay for being a Baal Chesed. And that's the price you pay for having friends. And that's the price you pay for staying married. That's the price you pay for having a business partner. That the other guy can sometimes beat you. And what you should do is, you shouldn't care. And if you don't care, then you don't have your gaiva. So then you can honestly apologize, because why not? It's true. I am sorry that I hurt his feelings. And you're back with your friends. Okay. A befairish or you side Yisrael, right?
So, the person does apologize. Is there any more to do if the other guy still doesn't, go back to normal?
You can apologize again. Maybe your apology wasn't good enough. You can buy them. What do you do when you get really, your wife really upset? You buy her jewelry. You buy her roses, right? There are ways of showing that you really want to apologize. No, seriously. There are ways of demonstrating, you know, your apology didn't come across sincere enough or deep enough. Or, do you know how much you hurt me? You hurt me so much. And then with a little teeny apology, you know, you stuck a knife in me. Oh, I'm sorry. It was an accident. You know, I'm sorry. I can't forgive you for sticking a knife in my heart. But it's an accident. So sometimes you have to do more than just say, I'm sorry. You know?